Point. Look the memories in the eye. Otherwise, I'll hide out here forever, avoiding my feelings, which is what drove me to drink in the first place. Casey smacked the arm of the chair, her eyes shining. See? Thousands of dollars worth of therapy breakthroughs for the price of one tarot card reading. Before I could answer, she was out of the chair and climbing into my arms. Thank you, Teddy, she whispered against my neck. My heart crashed against my chest. For the $5? Easy money. No, you big dummy, she said, her laughter warm and soft on my skin. Thank you for saving my life. It wasn't me, Case, I said, and let my hand rest on her hair. It was you. You did all the work.
Theodore, she said. Just say you're welcome. Or when we get to Vegas, I'll have someone tattoo the hanged man on your forehead.
Well, when you put it that way, you're welcome.
Chapter 9. Casey. The flight attendant smiled benignly at me. Would you like something to drink? That's a million-dollar question, I muttered. Pardon? I smiled thinly. Diet Coke, please. The attendant popped a can for me and poured a bottle of water for Theo, then pushed her cart further down the aisle.
You good?
Theo asked. I want to puke. My skin feels like it's a size too small for my body. And then there's that. I pointed to my jouncing leg. I should have given you the window seat. I'm going to see Vegas get closer and closer as we land. We're crashing right into everything I'm scared of.
Maybe it's too soon, Theo said. It's only been a few days since you quit.
I shook my head. I have to do this. If I stop to think too much, I'll chicken out. Plus, I'm already on the plane. Too late to have them swing around and drop me off in Oklahoma.
Nobody's mad at you, Theo said after a moment. My mother, especially. She'll just be happy you're okay.
It's more than that, I said. I glanced out the little window while Texas was a vast, flat space of pale green and brown below us. It's Vegas. And Jonah. My throat constricted, and I gripped the armrest of my seat. How do you do it? I asked. So many memories. He shrugged.
Work and school keep me busy.
I blinked. What do you mean, school? He made a face.
Bound to come up sooner or later. I went back to UNLV to get an MBA.
Teddy! I socked his arm. Shit! That's awesome! Why didn't you tell me? He smiled dryly.
You weren't really in the mood to make conversation.
I snorted. Seriously, when did you start? How much do you have left?
January, and I have a year to go.
I curled in my seat to face him. Why did you go back?
So when I buy my own place, I won't be totally in the dark about how to run it.
I felt my cheeks stretch in the widest smile I'd worn in ages. I'm so proud of you. Does that sound condescending? Theo said.
No.
While nodding his head, yes. I laughed and socked his arm. Smartass. I sat back in my seat, a strange, hopeful thought sparking in my mind. If he opened a shop in New Orleans, I'd have a friend. My best friend. What else would you call the person who dropped everything to fly across the country to save my life? Do you think you might want to open a shop somewhere outside of Vegas? I asked slowly.
Maybe. Mom's health isn't great.
He waved his hand at my alarmed expression.
She's okay. She's just... She had the rug pulled out from under her, you know? She's shaky and scared all the time. I'd feel like shit leaving town.
Theo was stuck. Suspended. Just like the tarot card said. My short-lived fantasy he might open a shop in New Orleans died a swift death. Family comes first, of course. But I hated the idea of him not pursuing his dream. I'm sure there's a way you can market a shop in Vegas so it stands out, I told him. You're really talented, Teddy. I've seen your work. Inked has featured your work. You open a shop, customers will come to you.
Maybe. It's a risk. It was already risky. New businesses fail all the time. It would be different if it wasn't Jonah's money.
He shook his head, biting off his own words.
I'll get this degree first and go from there.
He clearly wanted me to drop the subject, so I did. I turned my head to the window and watched the land slide beneath us. Soon enough, too soon, the plane began its descent, and I watched Las Vegas and all of the memories I shared with Jonah growing closer and closer. Tears blurred my vision, but I blinked them back to watch the strip with its lights, brilliant and colorful even at midday, glow against the yellow sands, like colored glass glinting in the sun. Las Vegas held all that scared me the most. And it was beautiful.
Chapter 10. Theo. We got my truck out of McCarran's short-term parking and drove to the hotel so Casey could drop off her bags. She'd reserved a room at a little budget place off the strip, not too far from my parents' house. They know I'm coming, right? She asked, chewing her lip, as we drove to the Belvedere neighborhood. I told them we'd head over after you got settled. But they don't know I was drunk for nearly 6 months. I didn't tell them anything, I said. That's up to you. Her hands twisted nervously in her lap, as she watched Vegas go by outside the window. It's going to be okay, Case. I promise. Casey nodded. Funny. Here in the truck, with the windows rolled up, I feel secure. Barricaded. But when we step outside, when I breathe in Vegas, it'll be like breathing in Jonah. The memories. They're in the air, you know? Like I feel them in my chest when I inhale. She put her hand over her heart and rubbed as if it pained her. I had no fucking clue what to say to that. Just as it had been with her withdrawals, there was nothing I could say to make the pain any easier to take. I just had to be there for her, if that helped at all. As I turned onto my parents' street, Casey sucked in a breath. By the time I parked, tears flooded her eyes. We're not even out of the car yet. She stared out the car window. I'm home, she whispered. It's Jonah's home, but it felt like mine, too. Your parents made me feel welcome and loved, in a way my parents never did. And I left. I just left. I turned in my seat toward her. Hey, look at me. She turned her head. You're here now. She nodded, smiling weakly, and then wiped her eyes. Let's do this. We climbed out of the car and walked side by side to the house. The front door opened before I could knock. My mother walked straight by me and engulfed Casey in a hug. They hugged and cried on the front stoop, then cried and hugged on the living room couch. Over and over, Casey told her how sorry she was. Over and over, my mother hushed her, brushed back her hair, and smudged away tears.
"I understand," she said. "You did the hardest thing. You stayed with Jonah to the end. For that, you'll always have a place in this family."
I rummaged in the fridge, trying not to listen, until finally my mother clapped her hands and declared the crying was over. It was time to eat.
"Everyone out on the patio," she called to the back of the house. "Henry, Theo's back, with Casey. Let's get the nice steaks, yes? Casey, you like steak?"
Casey nodded her head, and I got the impression she'd have eaten them raw if it made my mother happy.
"Wonderful. Theo, dear, will you start the grill? Oscar and Dina will be here any minute."
My father emerged from the den and gave Casey a hug and a peck on the cheek, and then we got down to the business of Sunday dinner. I worked the grill, flipping 6 porterhouses over the fire, while Casey and my parents made small talk. I didn't listen, but through the smoke of the grill, my eyes focused on the empty chair next to Casey and to my dad's right from where he sat at the end of the table. Casey's hand rested on the armrest, her fingers running along the wooden slat. My dad put his hand on the back of it as he leaned in to tell Casey something. Jonah was sitting in the chair. I could see him, plain as day, in the drape of our father's arm, holding Casey's hand. He was right there, taking up that seat. It was forever his. I brought the platter of steaks to the table and hesitated. Where was my place? My parents were on either end, 2 empty chairs on one side for Oscar and Dina, Casey and Jonah's chair on the other. I busied myself using silver tongs to plate the steaks.
"I'm so happy you're here," my mother said, cupping Casey's cheek. "It's all thanks to him."
Casey looked at me.
"I was in a bad way, trying to stay numb."
She smiled at me, shaking her head.
"Teddy dropped everything and came to the rescue."
"He did indeed."
Dad turned to me.
"Did you speak with your professors about the exams you missed?"
"It's fine," I said quickly, although the emails I'd received from my professors weren't fine in the slightest. Casey gaped at me, alarm and regret twisting her features. I hated my dad a little just then.
"And your job is still waiting for you?"
"Henry," my mother said, "I'm sure he sorted everything out beforehand."
"Everything's fine," I said, the heat rising up in my face. I dumped my dad's steak on his plate harder than I meant to.
"I'm merely stating my concern for your responsibilities here," Dad said. "I'd hate to see you jeopardize your standing with the university. Tuition is expensive, and Jonah's contribution can only..."
"Nothing is in jeopardy, Dad," I said. "So just drop it."
"Drop it like it's hot?" asked a cheerful voice from the patio gate. "I see it's business as usual, Shay Fletcher."
"Oscar," Casey said, rising to her feet. "Dina."
She threw herself between them, and they squashed her tight. The 3 friends embraced, the women holding on to each other the longest.
"Girl, you skipped town like the mob was after you," Oscar said.
Over the 6 months Casey was gone, he hardly mentioned her or asked about her, and then usually only if Dina did first. He smiled his broad smile at her, and I didn't doubt that he was happy to have her back, but once the reunion was over, it was business as usual. My mother clapped her hands together.
"Everyone sit. Eat before it gets cold."
I took the only seat available, the one that had been Jonah's, and sat down, feeling like an imposter, despite Casey's warm smile for me. She filled everyone in on where she was living and working. And my mother crowed about how she'd always wanted to go to New Orleans. Casey asked about Oscar and Dina's respective jobs. Oscar doing computer programming for the MGM Grand. Dina working as an adjunct literature professor at UNLV. The women fawned over Dina's engagement ring. Oscar and I made small talk about the Runnin' Rebels' basketball chances this year. But underneath it all was a sad truth. We were a bunch of people sitting around, propping up the conversation, with false smiles and high-pitched voices, trying to ignore the gaping black hole in our lives. "I have a ticket to next week's game," Oscar said. "That is, if you don't already have a date lined up." I felt Casey's sideways glance. At the same time, Mom asked, "Are you seeing someone special, dear?" "No," I said. "I'm too busy with work and school." "Yeah, right," Oscar laughed, while Dina regarded me with those dark brown eyes of hers, eyes that had a way of looking through you. I glanced away before she saw too much. "So listen," Casey said. She tapped her fork against her water glass and threw a look around the table. "I need to say something. I owe you all an explanation." "You don't owe us anything, dear," my mom said. Casey shook her head. "No, I do. For you and for myself." She huffed a breath, and the entire table went still. I wanted to take her hand, let her know she had my support, but didn't dare. Not while sitting in Jonah's chair. I nudged her foot under the table instead. She shot me a grateful smile. "I told you I've been in New Orleans for the last 6 months. I headed east and kept driving until I landed there. Or maybe I just ran out of steam. I left Vegas because losing Jonah was harder than I could have imagined. I thought I was ready. Or at least a little bit prepared. I wasn't. Not even close." I glanced around the table, all of them unmoving, unblinking, but all of them, all of us, connected by our own memories of those fucking horrible days after Jonah left us. "I tried," Casey said. "I wrote a bunch of music really fast, as if I could outrun the grief and get it all out on paper. But it didn't work. The words weren't enough, and I was too scared to face the enormity of the grief. I thought it would destroy me. So I fled to a different city, hoping to outrun the memories. And when that didn't work, I started drinking." The table shifted now, leaning forward or back, tucking hair and scratching at chins. I pressed my foot to hers harder. Casey sucked in a breath, and I knew what she was going to say next. The hardest thing. "I've been drunk for the last 6 months. Literally, every day, all day." She looked at me, her eyes brimming. "Theo saved my life. I was slowly killing myself, and if Teddy hadn't found me..." "Case," I murmured. It wasn't a big deal, and yet it was. I wanted to brush it aside, and I wanted to be proud I helped her. I wanted to earn my seat, and yet I already belonged here. "God, when will everything stop feeling so fucked up?" Casey smiled down at me. "He'll never tell you what he went through to help me sober up, but I'll tell you. It was hell. He never left, no matter how hard it got. I'll never be able to repay him for saving my life." She heaved another sigh and wiped her eyes. "So I'm here now, thanks to him, but also because I missed all of you, and I wanted to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry for leaving. I'm sorry I made you worry or made you angry or hurt you. I'm sorry, and I'm sorry." Mom took Casey's hands. Dina's chair scraped on the stones as she stood up and came around the table to join the embrace. Oscar, his expression subdued, was slowly nodding at me. Dad shifted in his seat.
I had no idea her situation was so dire.
I braced myself for the but, the addendum that diminished what I'd done, or the rest of the lecture. But my dad stared past me, turning tonight over in his mind. Do you see now, Dad? I thought. I had to go. I made a promise. I went to her now, and I'll go to her again if I have to. I'll fail 100 classes and be fired from 100 jobs before I let anything happen to her again.
Chapter 11. Casey. You'll come back tomorrow? Beverly asked, hugging me goodnight. How long are you in town? Just a few days, I said. Her face fell. Oh, I thought you might be here longer. Or that you'd be moving back.
Mom, Theo said. She's tired.
I have to go back, I said, forcing a smile. I'm booked for gigs, and I'm trying to keep my obligations. I'll visit tomorrow. For dinner? Can I bring something? Beverly hugged me again. Just yourself, dear. Dina pulled me in next. Her hug was like her gaze, warm and soft and completely welcoming. Though she was only a few years older than me, she exuded wisdom I didn't think I'd ever know. Looking at her, I realized what it meant to be an old soul.
You did a brave thing, she said softly. It might not feel like it, but it is.
I don't feel brave, I said. One minute, I feel proud for getting out of the hole. The next minute, I hate myself for digging in so deep in the first place.
We all have our ways of coping, Dina said, holding me at arm's length. You found something that felt like relief, something to numb you, and you clung to it, even as it dragged you down. But you climbed out, knowing how hard it would be on the other side. You should feel more proud than ashamed.
I hugged her tightly. I missed you.
I missed you too, she said. And I miss Jonah. It's been harder than I ever imagined. But seeing you again reminds me how happy he was. She smiled and held my shoulders. I know he carries that joy with him wherever he is. Take comfort in that if you can, love.
I will. But it was a lie. I didn't feel any comfort. I didn't even know what comfort meant anymore. Especially tonight, here at the Fletcher's house, where Jonah looked at me from photographs and dangled overhead in the glass lamps he'd made. Where he leaned over my shoulder and touched the small of my back. How I kept turning to look at him and ask what he thought. But it was Theo who looked back at me. I missed Jonah so badly. I could feel the cracks in my heart left by his absence. It felt impossible that they'd ever be healed. Theo drove me to the hotel. He parked in front, but I didn't move to get out. How bad is it? I asked. He frowned.
How bad is what?
The situation with your classes.
Fuck, Casey, don't.
Tell me. He sighed.
I might have to retake one or two. Not a big deal.
I closed my eyes and slumped in my seat. I owe you so much.
You don't owe me a damn thing,
Theo said.
Stop saying you do.
His voice softened.
You look beat. Come on, I'll walk you up.
Wait. I glanced at the hotel. I'm not ready to be alone right now. It's so fucking hard. If I hole up in my room alone, I'll just cry all night. Theo was quiet a minute. Then he said in a low voice,
I know a place we can go.
They call New York the city that never sleeps. But Vegas deserved the title more. The strip was bustling on a Sunday night. Cars jammed the street in rows of red and white, and pedestrians streamed along the sidewalks. We passed the Bellagio Hotel and Casino, where Jonah and I had gone once. Our first date, I realized, when the lit-up fountains danced to a romantic ballad. Tonight, it was Michael Jackson's Billie Jean accompanying them. But it didn't matter. I could still see us. Everything about that night was right there, perfectly preserved at the forefront of my mind. I could taste the cupcake he'd bought me from an ATM. I swallowed hard and looked away. Theo guided the truck down a side street next to the Wynn Hotel, and I knew where he was taking me. It's late, I said softly. The Galleria will be closed.
I got it covered,
he said. He parked the truck in a service lot where employees parked and came around to open my door. Do you moonlight here? I asked as he took my hand and walked me to a back entrance.
They know me,
he said. That was true, but the security guard didn't know me.
Not sure about this, Theo,
he said, stroking his mustache.
She's Jonah's girlfriend,
Theo replied. The guard's eyes swept me up and down, taking in my bloodshot eyes and stooped shoulders. A smile unfolded beneath the mustache as he punched a code and let us in.
Have a good night, Theo. You too, miss. Thanks, Wilson,
Theo said, and led me through the back corridors of the Wynn. They just let you in here? I asked. I was already lost in the rights and lefts, but Theo seemed to know exactly where he was going. He was still holding my hand.
I come here a lot,
he said. The Galleria was closed, but after a few words with the other security guard on duty, the door was unlocked for us, and we went in. My hand slipped into Theo's as we walked the long leg of the L-shaped gallery, lined with stone sculptures. When we came to the bend, I stopped. Theo squeezed my hand.
It'll be okay. I promise.
We rounded the corner. I expected to cry and wail, to be flooded with pain and grief, and collapse in a heap on the floor. I didn't expect my chest to tighten with exhilaration. I wasn't prepared for the smile that broke through my face like a crack in hard stone. Tears flooded my eyes, but not for pain. For the breathtaking beauty of Jonah's masterpiece. The water looked like it was in motion. The sea life at the bottom pulsed with life. I could feel the heat of the blazing sun slice through the delicate glass waterfall. A blur of yellows and blues, oranges and reds. I sank down on a bench opposite the glass. I breathed through the tears and let it fill my eyes. Let my eyes inhale the beauty of it. You were right, I whispered. This is exactly the right place to be. Is that why you come here? Does it bring you peace?
Some.
Theo sat next to me, an exhausted collapse of his limbs, as if he'd carried around a tremendous weight all day long, and only here could he set it down. As he stared up at the glass, he looked haggard and exhausted. I drank myself into a stupor. To numb the grief, I said. And I still want to. The fact we're 50 yards away from a casino, filled with free booze, is agonizing.
You want to leave?
No. I have to deal with it. Being here helps. But what about you, Teddy? How have you been coping? He shrugged.
I just keep moving.
Do you want to talk about it?
Not really.
He was closed up tight, arms crossed, expression locked in determination. You left when he asked you to stay. You weren't the only one suffering, about to shatter into pieces. I leaned my head against his shoulder. I'm sorry, I whispered.
What for?
You know what for. You hurt as much as I do. He shifted like he was going to say something dismissive. Instead, he sighed and said in a low voice,
like I said, you're here now.
I nodded against him, my tired eyes wanting to close, but if they did, the ache in my heart would pull me under. I drank in the beautiful glass instead. We sat with Jonah for a long time.
Chapter 12. Theo. I went into work the next day at noon, and Vivian told me Gus was already there, waiting for me. How bad is it? I asked. She shook the magic eight ball on her desk, one of her many kitschy knick-knacks. She turned the blue triangle toward me. Ask again later. Thanks, Viv, I muttered. That's super helpful. She chucked me on the arm. Go get him, Tiger. I stepped into the back office that was hardly bigger than a broom closet and just as cluttered. A bank of five lockers lined one wall, and the desk practically barred access to the bathroom. I'm trying to retire, Theo, Gus Monroe said as I shut the door behind me. He leaned back in his chair, kicked his cowboy boots on the desk, and smoothed his long handlebar mustache with two fingers. A ponytail of thin brown hair hung over the shoulder of his plaid button-down. He pinched a quarter inch of air between his thumb and index finger. I'm this close to Belize's beaches for the rest of my life. I'm not trying to get back to inking. It was an emergency, I said. I had to help a friend. She was in a bad way. She, huh? Gus rolled his eyes. For a chick, you drop everything and take off for a week? He shook his head. Don't let women lead you around by the balls, Fletcher. They do it once, they won't ever stop. Good advice, I said, adding silently, from the guy who's on his third marriage. Here's another piece of advice. You take off like that again, and I'm going to have to let you go. Can't be helped. It won't, I promise. A lie. I was thankful he wasn't firing my ass, but if Casey ever needed me again, I was gone. Can't be helped, I thought, and almost smiled. Vivian poked her head in the door.
Sorry to interrupt, but she's here, Theo. Your brother's girlfriend?
Casey mentioned she might stop by,
But the last fucking thing I wanted was Gus to figure out she was the reason I'd taken off for a week. I turned to go. Thanks, Viv. You just got back, Gus said. Now you're socializing on company time? She's a paying customer. She's here to pick a design. He rolled his eyes. Go. Then leveled a finger at me. But I'll say it again, Fletcher. I love your work. You're a talented artist. And having ink sniffing around here for news about you isn't exactly a bad thing. But no more taking off. You got me? Loud and clear. I slipped out the door and shut it behind me. Casey stood in the little waiting area, making small talk with Vivian. Her hands gripped opposite elbows, hugging herself tightly. She looked frail and nervous. Hey, I came over to her. You good?
Sure, she said, smiling weakly. Just more memories.
My stomach twisted around one of them, an ugly memory. The day Jonah and Casey came here together was the day we had to admit Jonah was getting worse, the day that marked the beginning of his downhill slide. Come on, I'll introduce you around. I led her down to my station. The shop was slow that day, and both Zelda and Edgar were between clients. Guys, this is Casey Dawson, I said. Casey, that's Edgar Morello and Zelda Rossi.
Nice to meet you both, Casey said.
Zelda smiled and gave a small wave.
Hi.
Good to meet you, little lady,
Edgar said in a warm, genuine voice, with no trace of a joke embedded in it. Casey perched on the side of my chair, swinging her legs back and forth. She wore skinny jeans, black ankle boots, and an oversized Rocky Horror Picture Show t-shirt. Her hair was down, her makeup spare. She looked effortlessly sexy.
Did they know Jonah?
She asked softly, with a backward nudge of her head.
I don't remember them at the funeral. Then again, that day is all a blur.
They were there, I said. And I don't remember much about the funeral either. I've dedicated the last 6 months to blocking it out. She smiled, and a short silence fell between us. Do you know what you want yet? I asked. I owe you a tattoo.
I still haven't decided.
I jammed my hands into my jean pockets. Maybe the glass that Jonah gave you? The universe orb? Dumb suggestion. You'd never capture it perfectly. Beneath that thought, I hoped she'd say no. I didn't want to use my art to render Jonah's on her skin. Casey frowned and thought for a moment.
No. I don't know what I'm supposed to get, but that's not it.
What you're supposed to get?
Yeah. I have this weird feeling that it's something specific, something only you can create for me. But I don't know what it is yet. It'll come to me.
She looked up and laughed a little. Maybe I need to pay Olivia the fortune teller $5 more and let her tell me. I smiled, trying not to look too relieved. The heart wants what it wants. I think I read that somewhere. My heart, apparently, was a selfish asshole.
Speaking of advice from the other side, have you thought about maybe buying this place? Casey asked. Vivian was telling me your boss is on the verge of retirement. Maybe he wants to sell.
I cleared my throat with a glance toward Zelda and Edgar. Thankfully, both were preoccupied with new clients. Hadn't thought about it. This place is pretty small and not really what I had in mind. In terms of style, I leaned closer to her. And it's not exactly common knowledge around here that I'm looking to get my own shop.
Why not?
I opened my mouth and then shut it again. I don't know. It's just not something I talk about. She arched her eyebrows. I held up my hands.
What? I don't need a bunch of people knowing my business. Aren't they your friends?
I guess.
You don't like to talk much about yourself, Casey said, a smile lifting her sad expression to something warm. In fact, I recall you hardly said two words to me when I first started seeing Jonah.
Now the smile stretched to a grin.
Strong, silent type.
I talk when I have something to say.
She rested her chin on her shoulder. I like that. I'm the exact opposite. I'll miss talking to you when I go back to New Orleans.
When?
Tomorrow.
My heart sank into my guts.
So soon?
She nodded.
Already bought the flight. I'm glad I came back, but I have responsibilities back there.
She smiled ruefully.
I'm trying really hard not to be a giant fuck-up anymore.
I toyed with a chipped piece of wood on the armoire. Think you'll ever move back here? She sighed as her legs swung back and forth like two pendulums.
I honestly don't know, Teddy. I want to. I miss you and Beverly and everyone. But being here is really fucking hard.
Her shoulders rose and fell, a pained, sad shrug.
I'll miss the hell out of you, but I think it'll be easier to heal in a place where I don't see him everywhere I turn.
I nodded. I get it.
You guys are so brave. You live with the memories, a lifetime of memories, surrounding you. I'm not strong enough for that. Not right now.
I tried not to let the crushing disappointment show on my face. I get it, Case. We all do. She smiled a little brighter then.
You need a lift back to the hotel? I asked.
I have an Uber picking me up.
Mom wants dinner again tonight, with all of us.
She nodded.
I'll tell them I'm not staying.
You sure you don't want your tattoo while you're here?
She grinned.
I'm not going to get one in New Orleans, if that's what you're so worried about.
She reached around and tapped her right shoulder blade.
This spot is reserved for a Theo Fletcher original.
A fierce desire rose to see that plot of her body she was saving for me, and I had to kill it quickly.
Casey slid off the chair. I should wait out front.
We started walking toward the entry, every bone in my body screaming, "Stay, please stay."
I'll make you a deal, she said.
What's that?
When you buy your own place, I'm the first customer.
That might be a while.
She stopped by the reception desk and stretched up to kiss my cheek. I can wait.
Her perfume filled my nose, and the whispered words sank into my skin and dropped straight to my groin. I stood there watching as she left the shop. Then my eyes noticed Gus, his arms crossed over his narrow chest, his expression 100%, "I told you so."
"Uh-huh," he said. "By the balls, Fletcher. She has you by the balls."
I wish, I thought. She'll come back. I picked up Viv's magic eight ball and gave it a shake.
Outlook good.
I shook my head as I set it down. I was becoming a chump. First tarot cards, now stupid toys. But I smiled all the way back to my station, and the smile hung around as I set up for my first client. When little slivers of hope put in an appearance, you have to grab them and hold on. Give them a smile. Otherwise, What's the fucking point?
Chapter 13. Casey. At dinner that night, I told the Fletchers, Dina and Oscar, that I was definitely going back to New Orleans. Beverly was disappointed, but told me she understood, so long as I came back to visit. And I'm not going to give up on the idea of you moving back here, she told me when it was time for me to head back to the hotel. She hugged me tight. For what you did for Jonah. I hugged her back. I didn't do anything for Jonah that he didn't do for me. Beverly pulled away and cupped my face in her hands, her face threatening to crumple into tears. Oh, my sweet girl, she managed, and let me go. Dina pulled me in close. Our wedding is in 1 month. I want you to be one of my bridesmaids. I recoiled a little, but tried not to show it. The wedding of Jonah's best friends, without Jonah present, would be so fucking hard. But I smiled and nodded, my happiness for them surfacing from beneath the grief. I'd be honored, Dina. She smiled at me and then said, as if she could read my thoughts, It will be a bittersweet day, but in the end, love must triumph. Yes? For all of us, Casey, she added in a whisper, as if it were a secret. Theo was at my hotel before sunrise. He took my trundling luggage out of my hands and stowed it in the back of the truck, then opened the passenger door when I paused to rummage in my purse, making sure I had everything. You're a true gentleman, I said, climbing in. Two coffees were sitting in the cup holders, filling the cab with their heavenly scent. I take that back. You're a saint. Theo grunted a reply. He said almost nothing the entire drive to the airport. His expression was hard and his eyes full of thoughts he wouldn't share with me. At the security checkpoint at McCarran, I faced him, tucked a lock of hair behind my ear. Teddy, I can't thank you enough.
Don't,
he said, his eyes looking everywhere but at me.
Don't thank me, Case. Just...
What? I tucked his arm lightly. Talk to me, Goose. He shook his head.
Nothing.
Okay. I stepped closer and tentatively gave him a hug. It felt like hugging a boulder. Goodbye. I released him and turned to go, but his hand slipped into mine and he pulled me back. His light brown eyes looked backlit from within, as if all the thoughts he never said were on fire. His jaw worked for a moment before he said,
Remember the other night, outside your hotel, when I said you didn't owe me anything?
Yes.
I take it back. You owe me one thing.
His hand was still holding mine. Okay.
You have to promise me that if shit gets tough and it feels like you're going under, you fucking call me.
So you can fly back to New Orleans and fail more classes? Or maybe lose your job?
Yes.
His hand squeezed tighter.
I don't blame you for taking off the first time. Hell, some days I want to jump in this truck and start driving, just to get lost for a while. Don't beat yourself up. You did what you had to do to cope.
The hard edges of his voice softened, as did his gaze on me.
But don't do it again.
I nodded mutely. I won't.
Promise me, Casey. Don't ever disappear on me, okay?
I promise. He kept his gaze locked on me a moment more, then nodded as if satisfied.
Good. Then we don't need to talk about it anymore.
He let go of my hand and hugged me. I walked down the gangway to my plane, turning his words and the conviction behind them over and over in my mind. He's intense because he has so much at stake, I reasoned. He can't lose more time from work or school to bail my ass out of trouble again. But it felt deeper than that. I tucked the hand he'd held under my arm to keep it warm, thinking about all the promises tucked into a goodbye. Stay here, Theo said, the night we scattered Jonah's ashes to the desert. I will, I said. I turned to the window as the plane took off and watched Las Vegas, and all its goodbyes and promises grow smaller and smaller until it was gone. Promise me, Casey. Chapter 14. Casey. To my sober eyes, my little shotgun house seemed shabby and dilapidated. With the beer, and vodka, and whiskey, goggles off, I could see it was a cute little place with a lot of potential, if only I bothered to give it some attention. I walked around, thinking about paint and curtains and rugs, when the doorbell rang. In the peephole was an African-American woman with close-cropped hair. She looked to be in her early 30s, wearing a denim jacket. Her smile was bright white but for a tiny gap in her otherwise perfect front teeth. A foil-covered pan balanced in her oven-mitted hands. I opened the door. Yes? Hi, the woman said. I'm Yvonne Robinson. I live next door. She inclined her head, then held up the pan, which smelled like tuna casserole. Welcome to the neighborhood. I frowned. I've been living here 6 months. Yvonne gave me a dry look. Honey, you may have resided here, but you weren't really here. Now, were you? I grinned, despite a blush creeping up my neck. No, I guess I wasn't. Would you like to come in? If you please, this pan is heavy. Yvonne strode past me, straight to the kitchen where she set the pan on the counter. Already the casserole was filling my little house with a delicious scent. It's just come out of the oven, Yvonne said, taking off the oven mitts and tucking them under her arm. So you best wait a bit before digging in. I'll try, I said, indicating for her to sit on the couch. It smells amazing. Tuna casserole is my favorite. My mom made it all the time when I was a kid. No offense to your mama, but I got them all beat, Yvonne said with a laugh. So, how did you know? That you were in a bad way? She finished, leaning forward on the couch. You don't remember me, do you? I searched my memory, then shook my head. I'm sorry. I've been out of it. Honey, I know, she said. Her words came out rapid fire, every other sentence curling up at the end, making questions out of statements. I used to see you coming home late at night, kind of stumbling. I wanted to help, but I work all hours. I'm a nurse down at Ochsner Medical. A few days passed, I heard you having a hard time. When your fellow was here, Theo, I thought he was the cause of it. I heard you yelling bloody murder and came over with a baseball bat ready to knock his teeth in. She shook her head, laughing at the memory. You should have seen the look on his face, poor baby. Her chuckling faded. But turns out he was helping you, not hurting, wasn't he? I nodded, trying desperately to remember. The shame climbed up my cheeks because I couldn't. Anyway, he told me the situation, and I gave you a look over. She glanced around. Where's your man now? Oh, no, he's not my man. I tucked a lock of hair behind my ear. Daddy's just a friend. No, more than that. My best friend. He's actually my boyfriend's brother. I mean, he was. Jonah, he's my boyfriend. Was my boyfriend. He passed away. It was the first time I'd had to say the words out loud. I had zero practice talking about Jonah's death. I had no canned response, no rehearsed story. I couldn't even get the tense right. When I could say my boyfriend had passed away without bringing the world to a screeching halt, it hurt like a hammer striking my chest with every syllable. Anyway, well, I used to live in Las Vegas, but I moved here after Jonah. I wasn't doing so well, and Theo helped me. What you heard and saw was me coming off the booze. I'm sorry. It must have been awful.
Not as awful as it felt for you, baby.
Yvonne reached across the space between us to take my hand, her dark eyes warm.
It wasn't pretty, but you came out the other side, didn't you?
Barely, I said.
Barely is still a yes. Remember that.
Yvonne's grip on my hand became a pat, and her eye caught the watch on her wrist.
I wish I could stay longer, but my shift starts in 40. Don't be a stranger now, she chuckled. You know I won't.
I hurried to catch up and open the door for her. I won't either. Thank you for the casserole and for helping me when I was...
down? You are welcome.
Honey,
if you need anything, if you want to talk or if the craving gets bad, give me a holler or knock on my door.
She peered at me intently.
Are you in a program?
I wanted to tell her I was determined to do this on my own, but to a healthcare professional like Yvonne, it would sound like an excuse. You can't bullshit a nurse. I haven't decided yet, I said. She pursed her lips.
Think about it, and don't think you're alone. This is Nolan's baby. We stick together.
She stared down the steps of my porch, shaking her head.
Boy, do we.
Thanks, Yvonne. She waved her head and marched the 5 steps to her own shotgun house. It wasn't as garishly colorful as mine, but it was 10 times better maintained. I closed the door and stood inside the quiet of my home. Alone and sober. Not entirely alone, I thought, and pulled the foil off the casserole. I cut a block of noodles, covered with crispy croutons, and ate it straight from the dish. It tasted heavenly. I ate that piece and another, standing up in my kitchen. I noticed my window faced Yvonne's house. Only 3 feet separated our kitchen windows. I threw open mine. Yvonne! From inside,